Hey there, it's JVL. On The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today, we just sort of ticked through the news of the week because Sarah's been away and basically totally disconnected from the world. And so we talked about Chris Sununu, we talked about Mike Johnson and Ukraine and DJT, Trump's social stock, and all sorts of stuff. Here's the show.
But we had something genuinely really good happen this week.
Okay.
Which is that Mike Johnson.
Oh yeah.
Did something really good. So did you catch any of this at all?
I saw his statement where he said, and it was a little self-aggrandizing for my taste, but correct. He was like, I'm going to do the right thing and I'm not going to live in fear. And if they want to go after me for this, fine, but like, we're going to do this. And so I was like, yay, Mike Johnson, who I don't like at all.
The this in it is very good. It's three aid bills. It's Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel. And then it's an even better TikTok bill. So it's a TikTok bill which pushes the deadline for a sale out to, I believe it's 9 months, and then gives the president another 90 days to extend it in case there are negotiations pretty close, you know, once mm-hmm. they hit the deadline. It's just a better version of that bill. And it's good. And Mike Johnson, look, you and I don't like Mike Johnson, but we got to say sure. that people do good
of
when
course.
They do good, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Wouldn't it be great if Mike Johnson did this sort of thing all the time? And
yeah.
If more Republicans were willing to put their careers on the line for the things that were right, it was great. I was really hopeful. I thought to myself, this is a moment that makes it so that if you squint your eyes real tight and start imagining, you're like, yes, this is what politics can look like mm-hmm. when you have two parties, which are basically semi-healthy governing parties.
Right.
Right. Like, this is what it's supposed to look like, kind of. And you know what? To give credit, Kevin McCarthy did this on the debt ceiling. Remember? We gave him a lot of credit for that. And he got stuff.
That's how he got deposed, though.
The problem is that's how he got deposed.
Yeah.
But he got stuff for Republicans, right? Yeah. In the same way that in the Senate, who's the Republican negotiator in the Senate
Lankford,
for immigration?
Lankford.
Lankford, right? Lankford went and worked and did a bunch of stuff. And that's what we want.
Yeah, and then Trump backed over him with the bus.
Right. And Mitch McConnell went as well.
Can you tell me, is there are these straight aid packages, is there anything on immigration in them?
Well, I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene is trying to put an amendment in on immigration that...
A real one or a poison pill one?
Well, I think she wants, like, space lasers on the border. I'm not kidding.
Cool.
Like, there is actually a space laser amendment that she's working on. It's amazing. But I want to throw out some more people who did really good on this.
Okay.
Joe Biden.
Ah.
Over the last few
that
months.
Tracks.
Well, no, but listen.
I'm just
over
kidding.
Over the last few months, Biden chose to leave these doors open instead of trying to make Republicans pay a political price. And he could have, if by all Biden cared about was the scoreboard, he could have made it harder for Johnson to do this mm-hmm. and made it more painful for Johnson, and he didn't. And then I want to go and throw it out to Hakeem Jeffries and Democrats in the House, because they did something which has never happened before in the history of the U.S. Congress, which is that they bailed out the majority on the Rules Committee in order to make this thing happen, because you had a bunch of Republican defectors who, Chip Roy and Tom Massey, and there's one other, I forget who just weren't going to go along with this, and you had to change a rule in order to make this process go forward. And the Democrats could have, again, if all they cared about was politics.
And letting the Republicans like languish in disarray.
Right. They could have egged that on, but they chose to govern. And so you have, you know, like some Republicans and the Democratic president and the Democratic leadership all acting in responsible governing ways, which is just good. Like, we just say, this is good. This is what it is supposed to look like.
Yeah. Can I just, so That's true. And I'm very happy about it. And I don't know why you're taking the optimistic.
Where's your euphoria?
You know why? Because there's a little bit of me. It's like America will always do the right thing once it's exhausted all other options. Is a quote somebody said once, and it just feels like, I mean, the Ukraine is, it's so late. Thank God we're doing it, but we have.
And people have died because of it.
People have died, and we have. I'm glad that some of the Republicans have basically like figured out, but man, did it take them fiddling while Rome burned for, I don't know, the last 6 months.
Yeah. This is the soft bigotry of low expectations on my part.
Right? Yeah. But yes, I'm happy. Give me more good news.
Do you think Johnson keeps his job?
Yeah, because I think the Dems will bail him out. And I think the Republicans who wanted to aid for Ukraine will support him.
What do you think the downstream effects of Democrats bailing him out on a speaker vote are?
I think the best effect would be if he and Hakeem Jeffries struck up a decent working relationship and they together isolated Marjorie Taylor Greene. Because here's the thing, Hakeem Jeffries doesn't want the speaker job. There's like a lot of people who are kind of like fantasy politics, yeah. Like couldn't, and I'm like, Hakeem Jeffries doesn't want to govern this right now. He doesn't want this. He wants to let these guys, but like, will they in the short term, could they work together and do some things? And like, I think that's fine.
Hakeem Jeffries has been a pretty impressive leader so far in the House. Like, I don't want to anoint him the next Nancy Pelosi, but so far he looks like a grown-up who knows how to make things happen.
One of the things I'm struck by with the Democrats is how, the voting Democrats, the Democratic coalition is in disarray, is mad at each other over Israel and Gaza, is frustrated about any number of things. And yet the Democrats in Congress have managed to be, with the exception of a few, Rashida Tlaib, everybody has basically hung in there and followed their marching orders, which is what Nancy Pelosi's sort of gift was that she could wrangle that disparate conference into something resembling a meaningful coalition. And he seems to be tracking with that.
Yeah, he's anything can happen, but seems pretty impressive so far. So there was, what else happened? Tim had Ross Douthat on the podcast.
Oh, I haven't listened to it yet.
That was a thing that happened.
Oh God, tell me what you think.
You haven't listened?
I haven't.
Boy, so I had to watch 10 focus groups
once I got out of the thing. It is on my dessert menu somewhere for when I have some time. Tell me.
I don't want to tax the reader's patience here because I have both written about this in a newsletter and we talked about it a little bit on the back end of the Next Level. Not a ton. We talked for like 7 minutes about it.
Now, tell me this. So I knew he was going to have Ross on. Mm-hmm. Did you get blindsided by this or did he give you a heads up?
I mean, he told me on Monday.
Okay.
And
when did he have Ross on?
Tuesday, I think.
he was like, we just, you know, he was worried for you.
I love that Tim has different guests on with different viewpoints. The thing that I found interesting about it is that I believe that Ross is a shy Trumper.
Okay.
I mean, that I think he is one of these people who we heard all about in like 2016.
Yeah.
Who, you know, won't say out loud that he's voting for Trump, but is going to vote for Trump. He doesn't want to tell when the pollster calls him up. For the survey, doesn't want to be saying it. You know, he'll say it to the robot, but not to the person doing the interview. And for a few reasons, one of which is he talks almost exclusively about the bad things Joe Biden has done, but doesn't seem to have any criticisms of Trump himself.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a generic, well, he's corrupt. But that's it. And in fact, he has a long list of things that he thinks were very good outcomes of the Trump years.
Mm.
And he said something to Tim that really blew my hair back. He said, so Tim set him up, was like, hey, what if I had come to you in 2016 and I had said, we'll have a global pandemic and then Trump will lose the election by 7 million votes and then he will, you know, refuse to concede and he'll send a mob to the Capitol and try to overturn it. You know, you would have in 2016 have told me that I was crazy. It can't be that bad, wouldn't you? And Ross's response was, oh, no, I thought it would all be much, much worse.
OK, well, that's insane. But also he wrote the piece. There will be no coup.
Yeah, of course.
Like before.
But that was 2020, Ross. This is 2016, Ross.
Oh, sure. OK.
And so Ross's position was that the Trump years were way, way better than he had feared they would be. Uh-huh. And as I listened to that, I thought, so I had two reactions. My first reaction was, I've never heard anybody say that. Right? Nobody says, oh, the Trump years, I thought it was going to be really bad, but it turned out to be not bad at all. But then I realized, no, there are a lot of people who say that. And those people are like J.D. Vance and Matt Schlapp. Right, those the people who are now on the Trump train.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only, and so Ross's the position he's I think trying to signal to people is I thought Trump would be terrible, but actually Trump was pretty good. But I still won't vote for him this time. Wink, wink.
Which is so funny, actually. It is an interesting proposition because I think for most of these people who defend Trump, we actually know that sort of behind the scenes, like they'll vote for Joe Biden.
Right.
Like a lot of the National Review crowd or whatever, they don't actually want Trump. They don't actually think it'd be okay, even though they defend him publicly. Whereas you're right. That makes sense to me about
Dalton. It's very strange. It's like one of the things he talked about with Tim was he was like, you know, oh, you're being alarmist about a Trump second term. You know, you have to believe that a Trump second term would be totally different from the first term. Because the first term was, you know, he was very weak and disinterested and he couldn't do anything bad and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I don't see any reason to believe that he would be different in a second term. And like, so Tim was like, you know, going out of his mind trying to list the reasons why Trump would be different in a second time. I wasn't sort of willing to grant the premise. I mean, I thought, actually, things like the coup, things like his vice president saying that he's unfit for office, like there are a lot, you know, things like General Milley saying that, you know, with 1 month to go, that the most important thing that the army could do is make sure there's a peaceful handover of power. It just seems to me that there were a number of warning signs from people who don't sit behind keyboards in New Haven, but who actually yeah. were in Washington dealing with the president on a day-to-day basis, who believed that there was significant existential danger for the liberal order. Just me. But then yesterday, Ross like tweets out some truth social thing from Trump and goes, yep, this seems like more the first term to me. So he's, you know, he's like invested in the idea that what Trump is projecting right now is no different than what we saw the first time. And it turned out the first time wasn't that bad. And so I just like the logic of that position is, and so I'm for Trump. He just don't, he won't say the.
What did the he last say he part. Was going to do if like he's not for Trump? What is he?
He said he wasn't sure. He just wasn't sure yet. Sure. So hard to tell. Sarah, it's so hard to tell. I mean, but this is the best part. This is the best part. So Tim was trying to like level set and he was like, all right, just do me a favor. Rank the last four presidents, best to worst. And Ross refused to do it. Tim spent 5 minutes trying to get him to do it and Ross just wouldn't do it. And the reason is, the only possible reason for it is because Ross believes that Trump was the best president of the last four.
No.
What other reason could there be?
That he didn't want to say Trump was the worst?
No, he said Bush was the worst.
W?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did I just blow your mind?
Not really. I mean, not really. Look, I am 100% on board with Tim having Ross on. I think Tim having people on that he wants to like argue with and to, you know, challenge this, I think it is the best. But I think that Ross Douthat is a complete phony. And
it's like, Sarah saying that, not me.
Yeah, but like I it just this I don't know. I try very hard not to read him because I don't think it's useful.
It is. I mean, the one just between us, sure. The one thing that I wish Tim would have asked him was whether or not Ross believes that people who read his column regularly, if they have a clearer view of reality or not from having read him. Like, what is the value he adds? Do they understand what is happening in the real world around them more for having read them or not? Because that's my big beef. Like, I just think if you read Ross, you get dumber.
Yeah.
Maybe not dumber. Dumber's the wrong word. You are less tethered to reality.
Yeah.
Because he's wrong about almost everything.
Right.
And it's... It's wild. I did write something else. I wrote I've been writing overtime this week because Jim Swift's mom passed away late last week.
I saw that. We're very sad. Jim.
Yeah. Funeral day. It's been a hard. That family's had a rough few months. And anyway, on Wednesday, I wrote maybe my masterpiece. Maybe the best thing I've ever written.
I did get it. I did get it and see, like, is JVL writing overtime? Like, what is this?
But you didn't read it.
I skimmed it.
Did you read the Wednesday one?
It was the one about
how Trump you're social, like, stock.
Yeah, that Trump social, that you are also a Trump social, you know,
shareholder. Holder. Right. But did you read that bit? Because I wrote the entire thing in Trump's voice. Did you not get that?
I just skimmed it. I was like, I wasn't allowed to look at my phone, and I just saw it, and I was like, "Oh, okay, JBL's writing."
We're gonna pause this at the 27:58 mark, and I'm gonna give you a dramatic reading because
Give the dramatic reading to everybody.
I gotta pull it up to be able to give it the dramatic reading, and the reason I am because I mistakenly turned the comments off for overtime. And so nobody was able to leave comments telling me how brilliant I was. And this, I am not normally needy for pats on the fanny.
Sure.
It's true. I'm not that needy. I'm a little, okay. All right. You know what? Fine. I am a little needy.
You deserve all the pats. You deserve all the pats.
I don't deserve all of them. But on this one, I felt like I deserved the pats. All right, so here, I'm gonna read you. So what I was doing is I was riffing on a Washington Post did a piece on Truth Social shareholders who have sunk, like, their entire life savings into this stock.
Oh.
And are watching it go from, like, 90 to 17.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was interesting is none of the people the Post spoke with were bitter about it at all. And they were just like, yeah, we're just gonna buy more. I mean, it's
is that Diamond Hands? Is that what Diamond Hands is?
It's really buy the dip, isn't it? I am a proud shareholder of DJT, and since the stock debuted on the big board, some beautiful, historical, very special things have happened to it. And then I show the graph of the stock going down. Stock go down.
Yeah.
How could your favorite president's stock be down so terribly? I'll tell you why. It's the socialist elites, just like the Russia hoax. They're trying to crush Trump, but it won't work. The other day, I was talking with a famous stockbroker, very rich, very smart, one of the biggest names in stocks. And he said to me, with tears in his eyes, Trump's stock is bigger than either the Google or the Facebook. The people need to buy it. It's true. It's true. And I go and I quote a bunch of things. Is this guy Jerry, who's in the Post piece, who is he owns a company that does tree removal, and there's a picture of him. He's like a 65-year-old guy with a chainsaw. Me again. Jerry is a big guy, uses a chainsaw, very big chainsaw, maybe the biggest chainsaw ever made, and made in America, not one of those Chinese chainsaws. Made in Manhattan was a great film. Jennifer Lopez, J-Lo. In the movie, she falls in love with Voldemort. Not a nice guy, but he has money. Perhaps he was an early investor in Truth Social. Maybe he used a time turner. Anyway, it goes on in this vein. And
I just think it's the best thing I've ever written.
Was Ralph Fiennes in Made in America?
Yes.
Wow.
How you like that?
Pretty good. Deep pull, man. Deep pull.
Isn't it though? Last bit. Last bit, so that you can applaud me. Yeah. All right. The post quotes one guy on Truth Social. The one guy from Truth Social who has lost 71% of his portfolio.
Oh. 71% of his portfolio?
Yeah.
Not just on the one.
The value. Jeez. 20% okay. of the value of his entire portfolio.
My God.
He tweeted, I can't help but feel sad. Feel like I'm trying to catch a falling knife. Here's me. Knives are very hard to catch. Especially those Ginsu knives. Something about the edges. Serrated. I think Japanese. I prefer the German knives. You're not supposed to say that. The cancels get very mad at you for saying you like the German knives. They'll say you like the Nazis. Not true. Not true. You're really just saying that you like the knives from countries that protected their borders from vermin. Can I get a slow clap here? Is this... I feel like
the cadences, the everything.
I mean, it's
especially
my
when you read it out loud and do the accent.
I'm working on my Trump voice. It's not as good as Kalita's, but the written version of this, man, it's awesome. All right, do you have anything else before we have to go to coach talk?
No, other than that was great. That was great.
Thank you.
You are a voice of our time.
I am. Possibly a voice of
a
my
voice
generation.
Of our time. Yeah.
All right. So it's time to go to Sarah for some coaching advice. Hey again, it's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.